good evening. Welcome to Freedom Reign Syncretism with Santo Bonacci here on a Monday night. Thanks all for tuning in. And we have Ole back from our show that we did on Cosmic Blueprints on Friday night on Freedom Reign's Blog Talk Radio to go further into detail as to his book and the expose of the names of the culprits and what have you. And I'm sure we're going to have a rather interesting talk tonight as well. Again, Santo Bonacci, are you there?
Yes, Kate, thank you very much. I'm here, and I'm very eager to have another listen to Ole, because, you know, when you hear things for the first time, all those names, you know, it sinks in, and then it sinks in deeper and deeper, and you sleep on it, and then you wake up the next day and the day after. You know, it's been a couple of days now, and you just... Other thoughts and other connections are added to what you've just learned. And so I've got a few little questions for Ole, and I've been thinking about things and the way things work. You know, of course, we both do a lot of that. Is Tony with us?
No, he's having a bit of an issue trying to get Skyped in here, and we're waiting for Ole as well. So well, I'm sure that's no issue with us talking to get some truth out as well. So, yeah, a lot of very interesting people that were brought up last week on Friday as far as the different culprits and how many different angles, as such as like the Kennedy assassination for one, the number of different beings put in place all around. I mean, Kennedy was doomed. there was no question. The amount of effort that was put into that and how many super uber hitmen well known that were involved in that day, and none other than George W. Bush Sr. Herbert Walker Bush was in Dealey Plaza that day as well. There's a photograph of him on standing outside the book repository. So all the characters in history move on to become, you know, the more sinister aspects, such as the Bush clan, the Clintons, you name it. They're all there, and it's amazing how many people get connected, such as Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, and how long they were involved coming up through Nixon. Of course, with Nixon getting the presidency as well, a lot of things changed. Nixon took the U.S. off the gold standard, et cetera. That was August 15th, 1971, that he did that. And it was at that point that all paper became, well, what it is worth today. It's worthless. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to going into a bit more detail with the individuals that were involved. I mean, Ole did a great job, but I'm sure we can pull a lot more information out of him. I think he'll be a whole lot more comfortable tonight.
Oh, beautiful. And so is he on the board yet?
Nope. And as soon as he is, I'll be the first to let you know. I'm not sure if Tony can actually hear us right now. There he is. He just showed up on the board. So we have Ole. So I'm just waiting for Tony. He's still refreshing, trying to get the Skype button to work for him. And again, you know what kind of fun we have getting on here. Some nights it's amazing. Like last night when I was on with you, my computer actually crashed. So I know that once the board is up, we have it's uninterrupted whether I get, you know, whether I crash or not. So never worry about that as well. So if I fall off, don't worry. The show keeps going. Anyway, Ole, are you there? Can you hear us?
I don't. Can you hear me?
Oh, loud and clear.
Can you? Whoa.
You're on, yes. Brother. You're on. We enjoyed, listening to you on Tony's show. Now, we know you mentioned a lot of names, and we can do that again, you know, or we can mention more names and just go over some of the things, the big things that you've uncovered, right? Because we see a pattern here. We see how they continue to use all the big names that they've got. You know, they want reliable killers. They don't want to just try a new guy out who's eager to kill and make some money. You know, they want someone who's done five or six jobs. You know, they pay them really well. They look after them there in Switzerland with hotel rooms and prostitutes and, you know, little boys. They're well looked after, these animals, you know. So, you know, they get what they want and they, you know, they offer their services. And so you see the big popular ones that have built a name for them. Let's learn those names, Ole, please. You know, I enjoyed that. I really, really did. Even though these are our naughty brothers, so to speak, they still need to be exposed because you don't kill anything in this universe. Killing is the only sin. The stopping of any kind of energy. That's it. That's sin. So let's hear from you, Ole. Thanks.
No, what I've discovered is that if you go back all the way to the Kennedy assassination, it's like George Bush Sr. is one of the key players in many, 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 many of these terror attacks and assassinations and so on. And they started with a with a team called Operation 40, and connected with what was called Operation Mongoose as well, where they got together a team of exiled Cuban mercenaries, very highly trained killers. There was one woman and the rest of them were men. And these people have, ever since that, they've been involved in a lot of attempted coup d'etats, but also assassins of the presidents, prime ministers. And they keep popping up. There were some of the key people were Frank Sturgis, also called Frank Fiorini. He was one of the guys that was taking in the Watergate burglary. He was one of the shooters in the JFK assassination as well. You have Felix Rodriguez, which was, he's still around, but he was George Bush Sr.'s right hand when it came to many of these dirty operations or black operations. And this Felix Rodriguez is a key player in the Iran-Contras. He was one of Oliver North's close friends and close people. And he was also the one that ordered the assassination of Che Guevara, or the liquidation. When he was there, he caught them in Bolivia, and he was the one who ordered. He was not the actual guy who shot him, but he was the guy who ordered the soldier to shoot him. And he was quite famous for carrying Che Guevara's rich wrist watch for many years afterwards. Then you have Jose Perdomo, he was head of this squad for about 10 years. And he was the guy who was the doorman at the Dakota building the evening when John Lennon was shot. If you hear the witnesses, the first witnesses of the film, when the TV team came to the site for the assassination, the killing of John Lennon, she said that he was arguing with a doorman. They don't say anything about Hinckley. Anyway, Jose Perdomo was the guy. He was at that time, he was up in his around 65, 70, I think. Officially, he died in 1974, but he was still around in 80 when Lennon was killed. And he was the guy who was standing to the left of John Lennon when he entered the building. He was also the guy who shot Lennon with four shots from the left. Hinckley was one of these Manchurian candidates who was just standing there waiting. You can also hear every time Hinckley has been interviewed or answered question, he repeats the same. It's like a recorded message almost. And this is quite typical of these Manchurian candidates, where they're sort of brainwashed. They stand waiting to be caught. They don't do any try to do a violent resistance or anything. They don't try to shoot themselves out of the situation. They're just standing there waiting to be taken. And afterwards, most of them have no idea, no recollection of the killing itself. They just repeat this story that they've been programmed with. It's the same with Sirhan Sirhan, who was the guy who was he's accused of shooting Robert Kennedy. He did indeed fire his gun. But most of these assassinations are, in my opinion, they're like no-brainers. You don't have to be very clever to understand that something very fishy is going on. For instance, with the assassination of Robert Kennedy, if like Sirhan had a .22, a revolver with 8 shots in it, but there were so many bullet holes in the ceiling, in door frames. I think it was 5 other people were hit, and so it doesn't. There were so many more bullets fired than bullets in the gun. So you don't have to be that clever to understand that something very strange has happened, and there had to be more than one shooter. And the guy who actually shot Robert Kennedy was a security guard that was called in extra that evening. His name was Thane Caesar, and he shot Robert Kennedy. He was standing right behind him on the right-hand side, and he fired 3 shots, one in the back, one in the, just below the arm, and then one behind the ear, point blank. It's also when you see Robert Kennedy, there's a famous photo when he's lying on the floor. If you look at next to him, to the left of him, that's Thane Caesar's tie. But Thane Caesar, he didn't remember either. I really think that he was mind controlled as well, because he never tried to defend himself. He never tried to explain or duck and dive away from any questions. He even he took a lie detector test and went past that. So I don't think that he's aware of either that he actually shot Robert Kennedy. But there were more shooters than that. There was at least one more shooter in a suit in the kitchen. That was witnesses saw him. And one of the guys that also were part of the JFK assassination was a man called David Morales, sorry about that. And he was also at the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was shot. There was another CIA man there as well, but his name I can't remember at this point. But it's just, you can see, just like with any other thing where you need really skilled people, these people, they have their team and they use them on a regular basis again and again. And it's like they say, why change a winning team? If it's winning, why change it? So,
wow. Well, you can imagine the way they think and the way they sit around concocting these things, you know, and all the gullible masses that have got no idea. I feel sorry for these people, you know, and yet again, I don't, yeah, because they're like mushrooms, really. You have no idea what's really going on in this world. And it's only a small gang, really. It's the big one is only a small gang, really. It's only a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that makes it so much easier and also gives so much more hope, I think, because it's just like you say, it's just a very small group of people. I mean, I think at the most there are a couple of thousand, but the rest of us are like 9 billion. So they're totally outnumbered, and mostly old men as well, so I can understand. In these days, I feel there's a very big desperation around them, trying to hold on to that, the so-called power they have. But I feel very, very optimistic regarding the future.
Yeah, this is the last of an old school of really, really wretched sorcery that this clan practice. This is a race separate from the children of the sun, which are we, who we are. these have made contracts to do harm. This particular sort, you won't get repentance from them. Don't look for it. Don't wait for it. It's not coming. They will not repent. These ones would rather be caught like dogs. They'd rather kill each other, which they're doing already, as we can see. They will not, they'll not come clean and be honourable and be sorry or anything like that. In fact, they kill their own family members that repent. You know, any of the family members that try to come out and speak, they're gone. There's no way out. You're in, you stay in, you die. You die as a killer, you live as a killer. And that's their contract. You know, they're doing their job. The thing is, though, they are very few in number. Their days are numbered. Their days were numbered. They're finished, absolutely finished. And I'm convinced, like you, Ole, so is Kate and Tony and most of the listeners I know, if not 90% of them. And that's good enough. We know the taste of victory. And we know the universe and how it works, because we are immortal. We have memory of how the universe works, and it always works in love. Love and light. That's what it's made of. Love, light, and truth. These are all different harmonics of the same thing, light. Everything comes from light. Everything is the child of light. And so it all reverts back to the light, except, of course, those that have decided that they will not partake. And believe it or not, it's hard to believe, it really is, that you would not want to partake of the light for all of eternity. But some creatures have done that in full consciousness. They've made that decision, and they've signed and sealed that destiny with their own blood. And this is why you can never understand their actions. You can never understand how they delight in death and the smell of blood and holocausts. And they actually delight in it. For them, it's living. It's something to, salute to the gods with your champagne glasses full. They delight in it. Rest assured, in their cocktail parties, the elite, your Bushes and your Rothschilds and the like, they congratulate each other for these, economic wins and this growth that they, you can imagine how delighted these oil barons were when they went into Iraq in 2003, champagne glasses all round, because their coffers were being filled with more growth. Oil growth. Anyway, sorry. Continue, please, Ole.
Hey, Santo, I just want to let you know that we do have Tony on the board. So, Tony, have we got you? Just making sure.
Yeah, I'm here.
Later. Okay, just carry on.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Ole.
No, I can't say I totally agree with everything you said there, but at the same time, I've always been there's a massive question mark in my mind when it comes to the mentality of this group, how they can be so totally cruel and insensitive to other people's suffering and these things, because the mindset behind the whole thing is very sick, in my opinion. So I listen and learn from some of these things you say. When I'm more specialized in the actual happenings, not so much in the mindset, but it is a very, very strange mindset, very different to normal, so-called healthy people, I would say.
If I can just interject there, yeah, absolutely. These people have got themselves into a position where they've been involved in some very, very deep and dark stuff.
Yeah.
And just to give you a very basic child-like example, when you join organizations such as the Masons, for example, Priory of Sion, etc., and these sort of organizations that are really dark and deep occultists, one of the things that you have to do, you get first degree, second degree, third degree, fourth degree, and it goes on and on and on. But the things that they're actually doing, and they're committing rituals, even though they start out, you know, lift your trouser leg up and stand on one leg and, you know, turn in a circle three times, something stupid like that. But it gets deeper and deeper and darker and darker, and the more you do it, you're actually acquiescing. It's like when Kate and I talk about when we actually sign a piece of paper, your intention, your consciousness decides to make your arm lift, to pick up that pen and sign that signature, sign of nature, on that document. So it's your intention behind participating in the ritual. And that's the whole thing behind it. As long as you intended to go along with it, then it's fine. It could be a trouser leg and circling three times. But pretty soon it's going to be a dagger, and you know what I mean? And it gets deep and dark from there. But the more they participate in that, the more they acquiesce and just carry on with it and accept it and agree to go along with it, the deeper it gets and the darker the rituals get, until it gets to such a point where they're lost to themselves, because they are literally, depending on which particular point, I don't particularly know, but a particular point in that, they do indeed get possessed, because they invite these things into their entity, the supernature of what's actually the deepest and darkest and the most things in our mind, our manifestation ability to manifest entities from other realms of our supernature, ourselves, into manifestation in this realm, if that makes any sense. So these guys are possessed, and they're totally lost to themselves. They don't know who they are anymore most of the time. And, you know, it's sad stuff, but it's very deep and very dark. And this is why they do these things, unfortunately, but I'll pass it over.
I think also that quite a few, I don't know about these demon things, like I say, I'm more on a street level, but I think many of these people, they are flattered when they are new in the power, corridors of power. They're flattered when they get invited to these kind of parties. They don't really know what they're getting themselves into. And the people behind the scenes are often, when they invite them to parties with sex and minors and whatever kind of, it gets weirder and weirder the further down the road you go. But I'm totally convinced that there's a lot of tape recording, filming and stuff going on, so that that can be used against them at any time, just like J. Edgar Hoover used to do.
Absolutely.
So once you got yourself into that, there's no way out, because they will have you around the balls.
Yeah.
And so I pity many of them, because I think they've got themselves into a really, really dangerous situation, surrounded by sharks that feel the same.
One of the things that I do need to point out at this point is that there's only very, very few at the top that know how deep and dark and satanic it actually is. There might be 40 people in the room. They've all got varying amounts of knowledge, but there's only probably two or three at the top that actually know, if that, what's really going on, and the fact that they are doing Satan worship and all this sort of stuff, and to the degrees it goes. So even though the majority of the people in the room probably haven't got a clue and think they're at the old boys network having a laugh, you know, the deeper you go, it's only when you get, it's like compartmentalization with black budgets and military programs. You know, it's only the people at the top that have got 20 people under them. Those 20 are only working in 20 different departments, and they've got another 30 under them. Those 30 are only working on one aspect. So it's not that till you get to the top that you can put all the different departments together and find out the components of the machine that you're actually building. And it's the same situation with secret societies. It's all based on the pyramid, and that's how the pyramid works, compartmentalization.
And it's really efficient. Do you know the project when they built the atomic bomb, the one they dropped over Hiroshima? I think there was about 20,000 people or something like that, incredible, working on the project. But no one knew what they were doing, what they were part of. Very, very few people knew it. That is really compartmentalization.
Absolutely.
On the tires.
Yeah, which is why they get away with it. It's how they get away with it. You know, if you knew what you were partaking in, you wouldn't bloody do it. But they don't. And that's the point. Is by the time you're in there up to your neck in it and beyond, it's too late.
Yeah. I know there was There was one guy, I think his name was Calderon, Alvaro Calderon or something like that. He was under Reagan, and he was, they got him, he was invited, he was starting to deviate, go off the track, not following the elite's ways. And what they did was they drugged him with a special drug, I can't remember what it was, and then put him in different homosexual situations where they filmed him and everything. And then they killed the prostitute, the male prostitute they had taken in, and got this guy to do all kind of horrible stuff. He had absolutely no idea what he was doing because of this drug. And then with this film and the pictures and everything, once he got back sort of to normal state, they had him totally where they wanted. And there was absolutely no way for him to get out.
Absolutely. The minute he tries to get out, they'll throw the papers on the table and then, you know, spends the rest of his life in jail. But this is how they do it, you know?
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's scary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They put them in situations where they're compromised. And a lot of people believe that many of the people that serve the Vatican in high positions are in this kind of a situation where they've got, you know, photographs of them with prostitutes or something like that. And, you know, but it makes me wonder, why would they be worried about that, you know, and what the public thinks is if they're killers? You know, they're killers anyway. So why do they worry about what people think? I mean, George Bush, the world knows he's a killer, and he knows that the world knows, and he knows that he doesn't mind that he let them know that. Because he was very, very sloppy, and he had an attitude, and, you know, and he didn't give a hoot what people thought. So, and yet he knows that a lot of people hate his guts. So he's not going to worry if photos come out about him with a prostitute. He's going to be like, yeah, well, that's what I do, isn't he? I don't get that part of it, but I know how they work. They certainly work like that.
But when you're talking about George Bush is one of the absolute top players. I'm talking more on a lower level, where, you know, and where you're really in the what do you call it, like the tentacles of the
octopus,
you know, where you really. But George Bush is, I think he's a really interesting guy to study if you go back in his personal history and his whole family, because it's a very, very strange family. All the way back to his George Bush Sr., his dad Prescott Bush, who he was one of very much involved in financing Hitler, transporting the money to the and financing the whole German war machine. And then afterwards, where his two sons, or he brought up George Bush Sr., where he's been involved in so many things. He was involved in the Kennedy assassination. It's the JFK one. Especially, you can see that the night before the assassination, there was a meeting. There was an oil millionaire called Clint Murchison in Dallas. And he and another millionaire, H.L. Hunt, they had a meeting at Murchison's ranch. And some of the guests there were Lyndon Johnson, the vice president. Richard Nixon was there officially for Coca-Cola. He was in Dallas as well, but officially for a Coca-Cola meeting. But he was at that meeting as well as J. Edgar Hoover from the FBI. At that meeting the night before, that was when they really got a green light for the assassination itself. And what happened when they shot JFK was, it was a coup d'etat, once again, just like my book is called Coup d'etat in Slow Motion about Sweden, but it was a coup d'etat where the people who killed JFK was the one that took over, got in power, and from then on, all, as far as I know, all the presidents have been in the hands of the same power machine. You can see there's a long row of them that was involved Gerald Ford within the Warren Commission, LBJ Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, who took over right away. Then you had Gerald Ford, then Richard Nixon, and the same people behind them were especially one of the key players, Henry Kissinger as well. He's been just following and continuing all the way up until today, still in the same, just going higher and higher up in the hierarchy of the power. And I think George Bush Sr., he's one of the only people in the States who officially don't know where he was that day, the 22nd of November, 63, when JFK was killed. He still doesn't know where he was. But there are photos of him just right outside the Texas school book depository, just outside the entrance, just half an hour after the shooting. Anyway,
wow.
These people, and it's sort of like you got also people like Dick Cheney. These people that people start to hear about when they're old guys with white hair, it's not that they haven't been active during the years. They just pop up all over the place once you start looking back. Like with it's the same team behind the whole fake moon landing thing. You got Kissinger, Alexander Haig, what's his name? Not Dick Cheney, the other one. These people were
Rumsfeld?
Very much, they were very much involved with that, together with Stanley Kubrick, and then through the whole Vietnam War, they were the ones who also really, as far as I've been able to find out, really were the one who got the whole Cold War fear going, because that was also like a massive propaganda thing. Ooh, you have to. It's always the enemy from the outside. You have to be afraid of the enemy out there so that we can sort of collect the force here against them and control you more and more. And
hey.
It's been going on. It's just the theme has changed over the years, but the same key players again and again.
Wow. So there's Bush behind JFK, John Lennon.
No, I'm saying that Bush was very much involved in the assassination of JFK, as well as he was involved in the assassination of Olof Palme in Sweden. If he was involved with John Lennon, I do not know, but I know that the killer was from Operation 40 that he used to, and that was set up by Richard Nixon back in the 60s, late 50s. So that was that is the team that Lyndon Johnson referred to as Murder Incorporated. It was called Operation 40, or also ZR Rifle Project. It had many different names. But these people, it's only a handful. They pop up again and again, like I said.
Yeah. I remember the terror of what happened in South America, Argentina and Chile. Australia was very affected in the 70s because of that, because we got a lot of Argentinians and Chileans that came over, still very, very traumatised from what happened there. I mean, that was a CIA job with Salvador Allende and all of that. That
also,
was just, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to bring another perspective to this, because perfect. If anyone has ever read Sun Tzu, the perfect weapon is divide and conquer. All right, and again, you defeat your enemy before the first shot is fired or the first soldier is hired. This is how you win wars. And what they've been doing to us for so long, and this is where I'll bring this singularity of my own duality in a perspective. And this is why, on Friday, I brought up the potential of an MK Ultra hit using Jackie as well. Now, I need you to keep your mind open here, okay? The reason why I bring these things up is to get people outside the box. And what we have here is a perfect divide and conquer. Now, let's say, some people say the moon was a hoax. it was Stan Kubrick. Watched all the stuff on that. Absolutely flawless timing and everything else. And there are those that believe that the moon landing was real, including the astronauts that actually went there. There's a lot more behind the scenes in the research that I've done, which I don't specialize in anything. I take a look at everything. And one of the things that is a perfect divide and conquer, I'm going to overlay this from the moon that was a hoax and was real at the same time, because what you have there is a potential for division called duality. And I think, Santa, we've talked about duality, and probably we've talked about this often enough, and it is a perfect weapon. If you can get people divided via opinion, rhetoric, or whatever the case may be, then you have a means to control them, just like Republicans and Democrats. It's the same friggin' party, right? But they make you think that it's somehow different. In the same way that, for me, I'm just going to use an overview of the Kennedy assassination. So have an open mind for a second. Maybe see the concept I'm trying to share versus what would be the perceived facts, because the fact is none of us were there. We're working off conjecture. Okay, so, sorry, my Avast is updating here. Anyway, so unless you were there, okay, I'll give you an example. Have any people listening in the call right now, any of you ever been to Belfast and seen a bomb go off? No, I have. Okay?
Could you say that again, please? The sound
okay.
Broke up.
Okay. Have any of you, Olay, Santo, or Tony, have any of you been in Belfast and witnessed a bomb?
Yeah, nope. In Belfast. Yeah, I've been there.
Well, have you ever witnessed a bomb going off?
Not there, in Beirut, yeah.
Well, no. You've seen it in Beirut. I've never. So you've been there. So you actually have testimony to the fact because you were there. In the same way that I was in Belfast seeing these things that always got reported wrong. What I'm saying is if you weren't there, all you have. Oh, please. All right. Sorry, guys. Anyway, so here it is. Here it is in a nutshell. Let's have a look at conjecture, because I wasn't in Dealey Plaza on November 22nd, 1963. And I imagine that none of the four of us have been. We're there as well. So let's have a look at some conjecture, not something that was placed for us to look at someone else from someone else's canvas. So for me, I look at it, you know, you had as you outlined so well, Ole, you had the gunman, the sniper on the building in the back, you had the repository sniper, you had the grassy knoll, you had the guy in the sewer underneath the manhole sniper, you have the driver in the car where you can see him reaching over and taking a shot as well. And, of course, when you analyze the fruiter again, you can actually see Jackie doing something that doesn't quite seem normal either. So, for me, I'm looking at it, if you want to make a hit on anybody, you want to make it as confusing as possible. I mean, Jack Ruby even said it, says, you guys will never figure this out. And one of the things that I'm not just disputing or discounting the people that were there, like, not at all. They were all there, and they're all known people, and all, I mean, Jack Kennedy was doomed that day, regardless of who pulled the trigger. There was going to be one of these entities that was going to get him, no question. What I'm looking at is, can you imagine if it had come out in the November 23rd, somehow that Jackie O, as an MKUltra or Manchurian candidate, having been mind-controlled to the point where she was there to make sure her husband's head was blown off, that would expose the conspiracy to a degree that is unimaginable. I mean, we would not be talking about it today. It would already be exposed, everything about it. So what I'm saying is there are those people that are that think, there's still people that think Oswald did it, okay? All right, so you got Oswald camp, you've got the George Bush Hunt examples and all that, and all the different hitmen around. And all through this, we don't know what the truth is. So what I choose to do is I look at every option. I look at the fact that the moon was hoaxed, and I look at the fact that it was real. Because actually, quite frankly, through my research, both occurred.
Yeah, I agree there.
Okay, so that's the only reason why I brought up the potential that Jackie Onassis, and this would have blown it out of the water right from the get-go, but boy, talk about controlling somebody. Hey, don't worry, Jack. We know that you killed or were part of the conspiracy to kill your husband. So another way to control her. And, of course, who does she go off and marry? Onassis, right? So there's another control factor that brings in, because there was a lot of quiet that went down after that. But the whole point of it is, what I'm trying to say here is, don't get caught in the duality of looking at one thing over another. Look at one thing and another at the same time, because only when you do that can you see the truth. And the names that you brought forward, my friend, absolutely, these are culprits of the highest order and were involved, no question. I've actually managed to put the bullet in, the two or three bullets went in the jack. That's still open conjecture. But there are many things happening around it, and I don't want to be disillusioned by one or all of it. I look at it all equally.
I agree with you. I've been looking at all different, as far as I know, from as many different angles as possible. Always, it's so important not to get what we call tunnel vision and just focus on one thing. You have to look at all different aspects and, you know, juggle it around and look again and from different angles. But then this thing with Jackie that you're saying, for me, it makes absolutely no sense. She was sitting to the left of him when the last shot was fired, if that's the shot you're talking about.
It was a left-hand shot from under the chin. If you look at it, again, analyze it again, have a look at it from another perspective. Whether you believe it or not, I don't particularly care. What I'm throwing to the table here is the option that it could have, and look at the ramifications of how quickly it could have been solved had Jackie been the one that made the final, the final hit on it, right? That's all. I'm just bringing that up, and I'm not discounting anything you've looked at. Absolutely, you've looked at many, many things. I just brought one more piece of potential puzzle to the table. That's all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, we got about 30 seconds here, so I just want to do the necessaries. Don't forget, you can get to us at W.